This episode is marked for sensitive content. Please check content warnings and the episode description before listening. This week on the Breakup Breakdown.
He came home and started talking about this group called the Proud Boys. I decided that I needed to really get to the bottom of what was going on with this Proud Boys group and the people he was associating with. So I opened up their group chat. I actually had to go to the bathroom to throw up. I said, I am disgusted with you. I have lost all respect for you. I don't know how we're going to move through this. You are going to cut all ties with this group. It's not just a game. These people are for real, and they are angry, and they are violent, and they are a threat to society.
Why not kick off election season with a little political breakup trauma drama where our interviewee says a group chat that her ex-husband was a part of got him in trouble with the FBI. Welcome to season 6, episode 14 of the Breakup Breakdown. I'm your host and lead relationship PI, Abby Murphy, and this week we've got a submission from social media where someone says their now ex-husband ended up on the no-fly list. And if you're wondering where we get crazy stories like this from, well, I always accept submissions via a form in the episode description, or you can like tag me on TikTok. My username is @TheAbbyMurphy, but if you want to go ahead and submit your story, someone you know's story, or if you think somebody in your life went through a breakup but you don't know them well enough to ask, you can always submit their social media handles in the submission form that's located in the episode description, and you know, I'll do a little research. And as always, if there's a certain part of the interview you want to jump to, you can find timestamps in the episode description. Hey, Heartbreakers. Welcome back to another episode of the Breakup Breakdown. Thanks so much for tuning in. So this week, our submission is coming from TikTok, where a woman posted using a viral trend talking about how her now ex-husband ended up getting into some trouble with the FBI and somehow ended up on the no-fly list. And I definitely wanted to know what that had to do with her breakup. But before we get into that, every week we give a different shout out to a different domestic violence shelter throughout the country just to raise more awareness. And this week we are shouting out Wings in Chicago, Illinois. The mission of Wings Program Incorporated is to provide housing, integrated services, education, and advocacy to end domestic violence, of course, in the Chicago area. And if you feel called to help them out, volunteer, donate, whatever, I'm going to link all those details in the episode description. But now into the actual submission. So I stumbled across this video on TikTok, and I don't know if you're actually on the platform, but sometimes these trends will take off with like different sounds where people will fill in something that's happened in their life that relates to the song that's going along with the trend or like the actual theme of whatever it is that's going viral. For this particular trend that was going viral, people were posting a slideshow photo on their TikTok. So basically it's one photo, but you can only see half of the photo in one screen, and then you have to slide over to the left so you can see the other half of the photo. And basically what people are doing is they're showing these photos of people in their relationship at their absolute happiest time. So for example, the submission that I'm referencing here is actually from their wedding day. So the first photo is a beautiful black and white photo of a woman looking over her shoulder. You can see that she is holding her soon-to-be husband's hand behind her. It kind of looks like they're doing a first touch before their wedding, like they're not really seeing each other, but they've got like a wall between them. So she's looking off at the wall and the caption says, "I wonder if he knows how hopeful I am for the future, how excited I am to create a home where we both finally feel safe." And so that's what people have been doing. They're like taking that half of the photo where they look really happy and they're asking, "I wonder if he knows blah, 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 blah." So for her, it's, "I wonder if he knows how excited I am for the future." So then you slide over and you see him and he's wearing a suit, isn't looking at her, looking down at maybe like his hand or something that he's holding. I can't fully tell because the text is covering up his face. And the caption says, "I wonder if she knows I'm going to end up joining the Proud Boys, get myself on a no-fly list to Israel, and a spot on an FBI watch list." And then there's a caption even below that. So it's the one that's included with the post. And it says, "We were young and dumb when we started dating, but that one was never on my bingo card, #divorce. And as you can imagine, the comments absolutely went insane. One user says, "Bro has some fascinating lore." Someone said, "Girl, I hope you're okay. But man, we need a story time of how this developed over time into the no-fly thing. I feel like people need to hear the warning signs." And I was like, absolutely. So of course, I was already in her DMs. Someone said, why don't I know what any of this means? But people kept saying there had to have been signs. There had to have been signs. That was kind of the reoccurring theme that I saw in the comment section. So if you've been listening to this podcast long enough, you know that there are always signs. I mean, if you get married really young or if you've known someone for a really long time, like people can change or people can maybe be a seedling of what they're going to become, but you don't really realize that maybe they are going to exhibit behavior in the future that's going to end up being their demise in some way. So of course, I'm like, this girl's got a story and I want the details. And I know after hearing that, you do too. So we're going to find out what happened when we break down this week's breakup.
We met when we were 15. We were both homeschooled. We have pretty similar backgrounds. Our families are both super conservative and religious. That was always a component of our relationship. I was raised in a way where I was always looking for my future husband. Sometimes it was pretty indiscriminatory. Like if there was just this person who ended up in my life, it was like, oh, maybe this is God's plan. Even though we met at 15, we didn't start dating until we were 17. And at that time it was like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. Like it was all part of the divine timing kind of deal. I was drawn to him because I loved boys. He was super attractive. We had good banter, lots of commonalities in terms of like our religion and our families and backgrounds and things like that. I was, however, not allowed to date at the time. So that made it all the more exciting, was this forbidden love. And because of his background too, I mean, he also, the sentiment was always we date to marry, you know, even as teenagers, which is just kind of crazy. But a month after we started dating is when he told me that he wanted to marry me, which is like, you know, a cute thing that kids say to each other sometimes. But this was in earnest. The relationship was just very codependent from the very beginning because of my family history and my trauma. And I was looking for a way out. I had always expected to get married very young because that was, you know, what we were told as women, our purpose is, but also because I needed somebody to kind of rescue me from my home environment, a savior, if you will. He presented himself as that savior. He was very sympathetic to my situation with my dad. He provided a lot of emotional support, even though I know the situation was difficult for him because we really weren't allowed to see each other. I mean, that attachment formed very intensely and very quickly because I was impressed that he loved me enough to stick around, even though we really couldn't see each other. That's how our relationship began. About 6 months into the relationship is when it became long distance. My parents, in an attempt to get me away from him, shipped me off to a Christian college 12 hours away. And we continued to date and talk. At some point, my dad told me that I could either come home for Christmas and be around my family, or I could continue to date my ex.
What did they have against this guy? Are you guys both religious, or is he kind of like a heathen in their eyes?
Their main concern was just that we were having sex before marriage. That's what it came down to. They knew that he was not as disciplined in the faith as they would hope for my partner.
So you go off to college, you guys still see each other. I mean, does your relationship progress or does that distance actually end up breaking you two up?
So after my dad gave me the ultimatum, I communicated that to my ex and he was like, well, I don't want to be the reason why you can't see your family, this, this, and that. We broke up for, I think, 2 days. And I was like, I can't live without you. And I also, I mean, part of it is like, you know, when your parents tell you something as a teenager, you're gonna, it just, thank you for your input. I want to do what I want to do. The crazy thing is, I think that we would have broken up naturally if that hadn't been part of the overarching theme, like just that familial pressure. And it's crazy because, you know, that was their attitude at the beginning of our relationship. And then once I made it clear that I was committed to that relationship and choosing it, they switched gears and there was this immediate pressure to live righteously in way of getting married and not fornicating. I only was at this college for one semester. When I came home for Christmas break, there was an extreme altercation with my dad and I had to leave my home for my physical safety. I was like running down the side of the road with my backpack, and my ex drove to meet me at a gas station to pick me up. That was when my parents were like, "Well, you clearly want to do your own thing and live your life, so best of luck to you." I was like, "Actually, I just don't want to be assaulted, if that's okay."
That makes me so heartbroken for you because, as someone who comes from a Christian background, I've always found that so frustrating about legalistic parents or people who are just really legalistic about the faith in general. It's like you clearly missed so much of what the Bible says about loving your children, even when they make choices that you wouldn't make for them. You're so set in your ways about being a Christian, but yet you seem to have no concept of what it actually says.
Exactly
I'm
that.
just picturing like 18, 19-year-old you being kicked out by your parents. They think they're loving you.
That was a crazy time. I felt like I had lost my whole family, was essentially homeless and didn't have anywhere to go. It was an experience, that's for sure. We continued to date throughout my venture, and I ended up moving in with his parents while he was working in a few hours away and living with his aunt and uncle. Once I moved in with his family, that was like the final straw for my family. I mean, it didn't matter to them that he wasn't living there and that we weren't actually sharing a bed. In their eyes, we were evil fornicators, and he wasn't allowed around the house. I wasn't really allowed to hang out with my younger siblings without my parents around. Because we were trying to make things right and we were trying to avoid me being disowned by my family, my ex proposed to me when we were 19. And that's when things kind of started to shift a little bit because all of a sudden I realized that this wasn't a fully autonomous decision. There were a lot of things that were influencing both of us to make this commitment to each other. And if those weren't there, we would have been taking things at our own pace, maybe even, move in together, see how that goes before doing the whole marriage thing. That's when I started to feel some resentment towards the relationship. At this point, I had caught him cheating once.
How did you catch him cheating?
It was on his phone.
Okay, so like messages and.
Yeah, at this point, I was living with his parents and I was depending on him and his family in a lot of ways because of my self-image and the way that I had been kind of programmed to internalize everything and put blame on myself for really any kind of hardship that I encountered. I resented myself for not being able to just move past it and forgive him. And it was, my fault for going and looking through his phone in the first place. He didn't deserve to be in a relationship with a resentful bitch. That's how I referred to myself when I was journaling through this situation. And trying to make peace with it. My parents had spent an insane amount of money on the wedding, and it was this like goalpost that we were moving toward where, like, okay, once we're married, then maybe my relationship with my family will become normal again and they'll accept me back, and I won't be this person living in sin. However, they liked to phrase it. That was pretty much everything leading up to the wedding. Things escalated after our marriage. I said some awful things to this man. I will never sit here and pretend like I was the perfect partner or the perfect wife. We were very good at triggering each other and bringing out the worst in each other. He's treating me however he wants. I'm going to treat him however I want. We're bound by the law now.
You could sense that you both regretted it or maybe thought this wasn't the right decision to get married.
Yes. Yeah. We talked about it quite a bit.
You're staying in it because this is what you do.
Yeah. I mean, it's what our families expected, but beyond that, it's what our religion dictated. The only justification for divorce in the church, a lot of the times, is adultery.
Did you at any point think that you could use his prior infidelity against him for a divorce?
No, that thought never crossed my mind. That was something that continued to be an issue in our relationship. Not that he was physically cheating, but we would get into arguments a lot about his activity online. Down the road, he started, subscribing to the OnlyFans of some people that we knew, like in real life.
Acquaintances,
Yeah,
friends.
that kind of thing. Like if he found out that someone that he knew in real life had an OnlyFans, he was putting our bank account information in. We had a shared bank account.
Did those people know he was subscribed? Like, was it an open thing?
I don't think so.
But you knew, like, he's telling you, or you found out?
I checked the bank statements, so Yeah, he came home and started talking about this group that I had never heard of before called the Proud Boys. My immediate reaction was, okay, that sounds weird. What are you guys proud of? He's like, oh, we're just like patriotic guys. Like a lot of us are like libertarians, just like common sense type politics. And like, it's really just like a way for guys to socialize. And it's like a fraternity for adults.
Which he thinks he's like describing it so well. For me, I would be like a fraternity for adults, like re.
Yeah, no, absolutely. At the time, I was just like relieved that he had people to talk to and like friends and something to keep him at, maybe out of the bars. I was never really political at all, and I preferred to not discuss politics as I started to look inward and investigate, what my core beliefs really were and why I looked at the world the way I did. I realized that a lot of the things that I had been taught just didn't line up with my lived experience. So he started to really get more involved, and he started posting these bizarre memes on Facebook, 4chan type memes.
Like really aggressive political statements.
No, that would come later. This was like still like the grassroots. I mean, I think that a lot of people really underestimate how much meme culture has influenced society. And that's kind of like, it sounds like a silly statement, but you get these like edgy, dark humor memes, and it puts you onto an algorithm where that envelope is being pushed further and further and further. There's a lot of dog whistles that these individuals use as well. They'll just put like, numbers in a comment on a video or something, and it's a reference to like the FBI black on white crime statistics, that kind of stuff. Some of it is super subtle if you don't understand the references or what they're talking about. At this point, it was all still pretty like low brow. I remember I just felt like very frustrated by getting these screenshots of his Facebook posts and having people question what the hell this dude's talking about. Obviously, I made it clear. I made it very clear, like from the beginning of all this, that I thought it was all super dumb. It's all a big cope because, you have to cope when you won the lottery as a white male living in America and you're still not successful. You have to point the finger somewhere, anywhere other than yourself. And that's what this group does. And that's why their propaganda is so effective, is because it does prey on this like quote unquote male loneliness epidemic. Come join our group. You automatically have all these friends and people who are like-minded and share your values and ideals. Like these are people who are talking about like building compounds and like living communally. And it all sounds kind of appealing to this type of person who feels like, a little disenfranchised. This is also happening the same time that people are starting to talk about toxic masculinity. So a lot of this is just, the pendulum swinging back and forth and responding to some of this rhetoric that, when you're not educated or you have a low EQ or IQ, you're gonna become an inflammatory person in response to perceived threats. These conversations are to these types of people are threats. I remember telling him like, I don't like this. I'm not comfortable with it. I feel like you're changing as a person.
So really, like from an outside perspective, I'm like, there's just like no reason to stay at this point, especially if from a religious standpoint, you're starting to see like some hints of infidelity. So like for you, what does it take for you in this relationship to go, I gotta bounce?
Feeling like I had permission was an issue. The infidelity stuff, that was all like digital, or like it didn't ever, to my knowledge, translate into the physical. So that was kind of like a, oh, he's just confused and he just needed validation. And like, I'm not doing enough as a wife to make him resist the urge to stray. Like it came back to everything bad that happens to me is my fault in some way. So in this relationship, anything that I had ever done or said that was hurtful toward him, I was able to use my actions as justification for radical forgiveness. Everything kind of shifted really dramatically when I went through his phone one night. At this point, there was already like a lot of tension between us, and I had no desire to talk to him about any of like this political stuff. I like had muted his Facebook so that I didn't see it and get frustrated. I really was just like craving peace at that point. Like I so desperately wanted us to be okay that I was willing to ignore things that I shouldn't have, like the red flags and the signs that people talk about that you should be looking for. Like my eyes were closed, but I decided to go through his phone one night because I just had a really bad feeling. He had been acting extra weird lately. I found a lot of stuff. You know, there's like the infidelity things, but I decided that I needed to really get to the bottom of what was going on with this Proud Boys group and the people he was associating with. So I opened up their group chat, and I think like I actually had to go to the bathroom to throw up after I read what I did. A lot of the messages were talking about the boogaloo, which is a term used by accelerationists, people who want society to crumble so that they can rebuild it the way that they see fit, basically like encouraging another civil war. They liked to talk about, really, they liked to fantasize about the boogaloo a lot. They liked to fantasize about shooting people in the street.
Any people in particular?
Yeah, minorities, racial slurs were thrown around constantly as I like scrolled through the messages. There was just more and more. There were photos that these men were sharing back and forth of their partners or their exes, private nude photos in the chat, just for everybody.
Photos of you included in that message?
I didn't see any when I was looking. I wish that I had continued to look through his phone more, but I just physically couldn't handle it. I'm certain that there were, like, based off of the conversations that I saw between him and the other men in the group. I mean, there were references to it. So, though I didn't like see the pictures actually being exchanged, I know it happened. But it's all for the clout, you know? They all need to make each other feel better about themselves. After I saw those messages, this was probably like 2 a.m. because he was asleep for work, and I woke him up and I said, "I am disgusted with you. I have lost all respect for you. I don't know how we're going to move through this, but I know that if you want, if there's any chance that we move forward, you are going to cut all ties with this group and be done." He agreed. I found out afterwards that he had already been planning on leaving because he had become aware that there was a federal agent in this Facebook group that was monitoring all of their conversations.
My God.
And that federal involvement is what resulted in him being put on a watch list for domestic terrorism, and he is not allowed to enter the country of Israel as a result because he is openly anti-Semitic.
So this is like a federal agent who's pretending to be one of the Proud Boys. That's how they got in.
Yes. And you know, people are going to have their own opinions about the federal involvement in the Proud Boys now. There's a lot of ex-Proud Boys and people who are just kind of lightly associated with the Proud Boys who like to claim that the Proud Boys was always a federal psyop or like a means of propaganda in terms of seeing who was willing to be recruited and who was susceptible to this kind of messaging. But the reality is that there were a lot of individuals involved in this group who were participating in earnest. It's not just a game. These people are for real, and they are angry, and they are violent, and they are a threat to society. I should have mentioned one of the reasons why I had decided to go through his phone was a day before he had told me that our home address had been doxxed online, and that if anybody came to the door, I shouldn't answer it, and that I just needed to like be aware. And he didn't really provide a whole lot of context. And I was like, why would anyone want to dox you online? Like, where did this come from? Who are you talking to? What kind of arguments are you getting into online where people are posting your address and sending you death threats? Like, there has to be a reason for this. You can't just tell me that it's Antifa. Like, I don't believe you. So he had agreed to leave this group, you know, quote unquote, for me, but in actuality, he had already identified a threat to himself. So from that point on, there obviously, like, it wasn't like he just shut up after he left this group. You know, he still had his same radicalized ideas. He was still being extremely hateful and inflammatory online. It was just, I felt so lost and overwhelmed at the time. This was in the midst of me doing that whole religious deconstruction and finally seeking treatment for my mental health. And I literally couldn't handle it. There is blame that falls on me in terms of like enabling him to be a piece of shit with a wife. I didn't have the mental capacity to even think about leaving him for a very long time because I was so unwell. And that's a choice that I made. I regret that because of my values, especially after 2020 happened and the Black Lives Matter protests were happening. And I just started, quote unquote, doing the work and recognizing that a lot of my upbringing and just generalized social programming had made me insensitive and ignorant to the plights that people in this country face based on the color of their skin. I wish that I had known then what I know now for principal reasons. I think really what was the core issue is that this was my person, right? Like we were intensely bonded to each other. It was a trauma bond. We were extremely codependent. I wasn't willing to give that up. Like, you know, even if this is a person that's causing me an insane amount of stress and pain and anger, this is still a person who's not leaving me. When I left my parents' house the day that everything blew up, my dad locked the door behind me. Security, there's a high degree of attachment to the idea of security. However, you know, as I be continued to educate myself in earnest and really try to what I thought was righting my wrongs, you know, in terms of recognizing my privilege in this world and understanding what microaggressions are and things like that, it became more and more clear that we were incompatible at a very baseline level because of who he had become. He can't really feel this way. He can't really think these things. This is just like a symptom of the machine and the propaganda, and he's just ignorant. And maybe if I can say exactly the right thing at the exact right time and the perfect tone, it'll all click together and he'll like wake up from this haze that has overtaken his mind. No, it was really just like a lot of really unproductive conversations.
Well, I think a lot of the reasons you specified for not leaving are incredibly valid. Obviously, from like 30,000 feet, you can see all of this and go, okay, well, she should have just left. Like, he doesn't match her values. He's clearly not, they're clearly not the right partners for each other at this point in time. You know, you should just bounce, but it's so much more convoluted than that. I mean, you are a product of how you were raised. And, you know, to a point, you get to choose who you are now and you get to unlearn some of those things that you grew up with, but it's still difficult. So, at what point and what gets you to a place to have the courage to say that this relationship is no longer for you?
I decided, because I was so miserable, to essentially run away. I had been laid off from work. I was dealing with an incredible amount of suicidal thoughts and ideations. There was a night where I was walking into the ocean and didn't plan on coming back, that type of thing. I don't think that in my state of mind, I really was able to clearly identify like the immediate stressors in my life that were putting me in that reactive state of mind. I just knew that I didn't want to feel this way anymore. So I decided to take a road trip to as many national parks as I could. I told my ex-husband that I wanted us to separate upon my return. The hope then was still that we would find a way to reconcile. At this point, we had been together for 9 years. He was, again, you know, my person, my closest confidant. I thought that maybe time apart, where we could take some time for ourselves and position it as like an opportunity for us to kind of date for a year or something like that. I don't know what I was thinking. I was just desperate to find a solution that didn't involve divorce. I was very worried that my family was going to disown me again. And even if they didn't disown me, I knew that I wouldn't have their support.
What you're saying like does make sense because it feels like you've been with this guy for 9 years and you're both two completely different people at this point. So it's almost like the way you're phrasing it is like dating for a year. It's like, can we start from square one and can we date as if we were just meeting today?
Yeah, to like see what's left, essentially. So I left on this road trip, and it really was a once in a lifetime trip and opportunity to just kind of take this like personal retreat for myself. However, that was my first time ever being without him for any kind of extended period of time. When I came back after about a month, I still remember how it felt when we like saw each other, and I like fell into his arms, and I was just relieved that he was still home, because he was the person who comforted me. You know, even when he was the one who was hurting me, I craved his comfort. I don't want to say that it was weakness on my part, because a lot of people have this relationship pattern with their toxic partners where they can't break that chemical bond. It did ultimately come down to a lack of discipline and a lack of being able to follow through on what I knew what was best for me. It was only a few months after this that we ultimately ended up separating for good.
And what got you to that point? Like, why a couple months later?
We were still on opposite schedules at this point, but we had a little bit more time together, and we went to a marriage retreat together. He was putting in effort, it seemed. It gave me some hope, like, okay, maybe he's coming back to himself. Maybe he does care about being a good person and trying to redeem himself and make up for all the horrible things he's done and said. But again, I felt so unsettled during this time, because once your body recognizes something as trauma, it's going to store it. You can't avoid it. Like, even if you push it out of your conscious mind, subconsciously, something in your body is going to feel just not right. I just pushed through it, and I was working a lot of hours as much as I could to keep myself busy and figure out how to, you know, go about the rest of my life. At this point, too, I had done enough deconstruction of my religion to recognize the effects of purity culture on me and my dating experience. You know, I had never had the opportunity to date as an adult because we were high school sweethearts, and I'd never had the opportunity to explore anything outside of what I already had. My ex-husband was the only man that I had ever slept with until we divorced. When I realized that a lot of my sexuality had been driven and restricted by shame, I started to really feel a lot of restlessness of, like, I missed out on a whole like adult experience of being single and dating. And that was something that I thought about a lot. You know, we didn't have a good relationship, and then I'm like really spending a lot of time thinking about other people and what could have been and that type of thing. So I was really like just super disengaged from the relationship overall for probably the last 4 to 6 months as I was like doing that like introspection.
So when you broke up with them, did you just say, I can't do this anymore. I feel like I've missed out on everything. Or how did that go?
So we actually talked about what it would look like for us to open our marriage before we separated and things ended. I had a few mutual friends who had done that, opened their marriage with similar backgrounds, because they too felt like they had, you know, quote unquote, missed out on really, I mean, like exploring their sexuality. And so we had a couple of like really open and honest conversations about that, and he was receptive, and nothing happened as a result of those conversations. But it once I told him that like I was curious about what it would be like to be with someone else, and he told me, I don't think I would really care if you slept with someone else. That was like, oh, I don't think you actually care about me. It wasn't that he felt so secure in our relationship that it wouldn't bother him. It was that he just didn't care straight up. At that point, I was kind of like, okay, I think that I need to really like do the thing and make a choice for myself. Like, this is the rest of my life, and I've been miserable for how many years now, and I have all these feelings of restlessness and wanting to leave. And you know, I have the justification, absolutely, between the infidelity and the alcoholism that continued to go unaddressed, and obviously, you know, the hate crime behavior. But one night I came home from work, got off late, and he was already in bed asleep, passed out. His phone was open and just laying on his chest. And I picked it up to plug it in for him and set his alarm for work in the morning because, you know, I'm a good wife. And his phone was open to a Snapchat conversation between him and someone I didn't recognize. And it was open to their shared media tab. In that shared media tab was just nude photos. And as I scrolled through these photos, I recognized some of my own tattoos.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And so that's when I realized that he had been sending photos and videos of me to other people. I think like I really like didn't I didn't pursue my investigation at that point. I remember like I looked at like I opened up the video of myself and I went, oh, cool, awesome. Like it was like a switch flipped in my mind because it just became so abundantly clear that this man did not respect me. And he also did not, he completely disrespected my autonomy as a human being. So I plugged his phone in, I set his alarm, and I got into bed and fell asleep. And the next morning, I woke up and went to a very early work meeting. And I went around to all of my work friends and I told them everything that I had found and seen because I knew that I needed the accountability of embarrassment. Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where people who are in abusive or toxic relationships, they'll very rarely share the worst of the details to their trusted friends and family because if you choose to continue the relationship, it's just embarrassing because you know that other people know what kind of disrespect you're tolerating. And I knew that if I made it clear to the people that I trusted and cared about, like how awful he had been and the ways in which he had betrayed my trust, that I wouldn't be able to look them in the face and say, yes, I am continuing to choose this person as my partner. That night, he texted me saying, like, he was going to pick up Chinese and we were going to have a movie night or whatever. And he said, okay, sounds good. He came home, we ate Chinese, he fell asleep on the couch. And that's when I said, okay, I got it. I have to do this. Like, I actually have to do this. And I woke him up and I said, so I know everything. And there's really not a whole lot for us to talk about because I don't care to hear anything that you have to say other than when you're going to be able to move out.
Wow.
That, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there was just no emotionality. The switch had been flipped. And I just, it, at that point, it became about logistics.
How did he respond?
He was upset. I mean, he expressed regret to me, but, you know, I had to take that with a grain because you got caught. You're upset that caught and you feel embarrassed because you know you did something wrong. He asked if he could, if he had to leave that night or if he could stay one more day. And at that point, I think it was about 11 p.m. So I let him stay and we slept in the same bed that night. And that was the last time that he ever lived in that house.
Damn. Well, first of all, congrats on having the courage to finally make the decision. I know it was a long journey getting there, but I mean, there's just so many mental battles you had to face before you could get to that moment to like cut things off and move on and decide enough was enough. So, what did life look like after that for you? Like, I mean, is it just kind of like logistical stuff with getting your stuff separated from him? Like, did he ever try and get back with you? Like, what was the experience like?
So I have to be completely honest, I did not handle that situation well at all. I felt empowered when I made the decision to end things and when I told him to leave. When he did leave, when he didn't fight to stay, it started to sink in that this was really happening and that I was alone and I was going to have to go through this divorce and all of that. It really did trigger a lot of my abandonment wounds and attachment issues, and it triggered an extreme manic episode. At that point, when you're spending a lot of time alone in your room late at night, crying and ruminating and thinking about what could I have done to avoid this? Because that's still where my mind went. What could I have done to avoid this? What did I do to contribute to the toxicity of this relationship? Because I do care a lot about taking accountability for the things that I've done and the things that I have used as a learning lesson and motivation to grow as a person. And I felt regret for a lot of the things that I did early on in the relationship, you know, the stonewalling and the communication styles that we were using. And, you know, in my mind, I was like, that's what it came down to. Like, I poisoned him and I made him this angry person and I wasn't a loving wife. And that made him turn to this hate group. And, you know, it was all my fault because I was the one who was sitting alone in the home that we used to share, crying while he was out drinking, doing lines of coke off of people's ass cheeks, having the time of his life. And clearly not missing me at all. I felt like maybe there was more we could have done. You know, we never went to full on marriage counseling and was like, well, maybe before we call it quits for good, we should, you know, do this just so that we know we've like explored every avenue and I've literally done everything I could. I think that's what it came down to was this idea of feeling guilty that there was more I could have done. I wanted to feel like there was no stone left unturned because it was still really hard for me to shed the idea that I had not been a good enough wife to keep him from becoming this person because he was not that person when we met. You know, he wasn't. He was a good boyfriend. I felt very loved the first year of our relationship. He was my primary support system, the only one that I had when everything went down with my family. And I was really mourning the loss of that and just was really concerned that I would never find a partner again, that I wouldn't feel loved again, that I wouldn't find someone to give my love to. When I wasn't texting him and asking him, are you sure you don't want to go to marriage counseling? I was swiping on Tinder and trying to distract myself with external validation and the promise of something new. That 6 months following the separation divorce was not a good time for your girl.
Yeah. It's so interesting that even when you walked away, you were still like, but I did I could I do more? Could I have done more to make this relationship work? And I think at the end of the day, and I wonder if you discovered this through therapy or some other form that like you had no control over this dude. Like he was going to go down whatever path he was going to go down. And at the end of the day, like what other people do is not your fault.
Right. What I really had to let go of was this idea that I could save this hateful man from himself, because that's what it came down to, is he did not have an easy life either. He had a really complicated childhood. There were a lot of things that happened to him that were fucked up. And it provides context as to why he's just like this simmering pool of rage at all times. It's not justification, but it's the context. And even through all of the horrible things that he did and our awful arguments, all of our arguments ended up in him like breaking down and crying and saying he hated himself for disappointing me and he wished that he was a better person and I deserve so much better and blah, blah, blah. So through all of this, I saw him and I still do see him as this very hurt, small boy who should have had a different life. I don't know. I just don't think that any child is born into this world wanting to become a hateful person. And so I mourn the person that I believe he should have become.
I almost wonder if part of your, and I'm using savior complex, not in a derogatory way, but like your savior complex towards him is like you seeing how you guys both came from similar backgrounds and you having the objectiveness to go one way and he went the other. I almost feel like you were trying to save the part of you that recognized yourself in him,
Oh,
if you.
absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, my therapist said the same thing. It's a lot easier to, I mean, it's not easy, but you convince yourself that you can save someone else. And the reality is that you need to be saving yourself. Like all of the time and energy that I poured into him trying to redeem him, I should have been directing towards myself and my growth and healing and all of the things that I was actively struggling with. But, you know, those are all really the things that I was dealing with are all very difficult things to address, things that your ego doesn't want to address, your mind wants to turn away from because it's painful and it's scary and it hurts to look at those things. So it's really just avoidance. So it's a redirection of that energy that should have been spent on myself, but I externalized it toward him because that's easier somehow.
Is there a moment in your relationship that you wish you had more courage to leave in that moment? Because I know if I asked you, like, okay, if you could leave at any point in the relationship, when would you leave? You know, you might say before the wedding, but like taking the context of your life in mind, like, is there a part of that relationship where you felt like I could have left? I feel like I almost had the courage, but I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many times. There were so many times where we discussed separation and talked about divorce. And I remember at least one or two occasions he had like packed up some stuff to take to his mom's. And like the idea was like, okay, we're going to take some time and then come back together and like try to have a conversation. And that night or those 2 nights, instead of going to his mom's, he went out to the bar. And I remember being like so terrified of something bad happening to him or him making a stupid mistake. And I remember calling him over and over and over until he answered, and I begged him to come home just because I was so concerned. And it was that attachment and abandonment issue being triggered by the threat of of loss.
I know so many women are gonna hear this, and I say specifically women because I feel like a lot of the issues that you're bringing up have to do with the environment that you grew up in and the way that women are viewed in that context. What would you say to those women that are almost existing in two headspaces? Like there's the headspace that has all of the knowledge of what they grew up with, and then the person they're becoming, like with the new knowledge and information that they're having. What would you tell them to give them more clarity and courage to get out of a situation that's not serving them?
If you're thinking about leaving, you should probably leave. If you leave, here's the thing, like people do leave these situations all the time and they go back. What I had to remind myself when I was really struggling with my decision was that I made what I thought was the best decision for myself, and that if we were truly meant to be together, that we would be, that this would be his wake-up call. When you cut off access, that gives the other person two options. They either walk away and you guys live out your lives separately and move on, or that person makes the changes necessary to earn back your trust and respect. But if you don't ever actually walk away and there's just this threat of leaving and you never follow through, that person will never take that threat of losing you seriously. Now, that's not to say that you should try to modify anyone's behavior by threatening to leave or saying that, like, you know, I'm going to have to give up on this relationship, whatever. You can't make someone change, but sometimes your absence, if it is at its core a healthy love and just something that got convoluted somewhere along the way, you'll know based off of how things play out after you actually follow through on your conviction. And I think what I would urge women to do the most is to trust their intuition. I think as women, we are by nature highly intuitive by design, and we're constantly told to second guess that intuition. It doesn't matter if somebody loves you if you don't feel loved. If your partner does not make you feel loved, it doesn't matter who they want to be to you in this relationship. At the end of the day, there's something very, very deeply wrong in the foundation. Life is so short, and we really don't know how much time we're ever given. And I think that the fear of being alone is really what keeps a lot of women stuck in relationships that are extremely harmful to them and their well-being. And I read a statistic the other day that for me as a currently single woman gave me a lot of, it made me feel very empowered. And I'll share it with you. It's that 80% of women, when they die, are unpartnered. And that has to do,
I don't know if that made me feel better.
It made me feel better. And I'll tell you why. So obviously we all know that women tend to outlive their partners. So that's the majority of that stat. But what that told me when I read the statistic is that I am equipped as a woman to be alone. You know, every person is, but I think specifically women, we do not give ourselves nearly enough credit for being independent and self-sufficient, especially in my background. It's your purpose is to be a helpmate to the man. You're supposed to be a wife and a mother and all of these things. But biologically, we outlive these men. So you are capable of being alone, babe. Why are we so desperate to keep these men around who don't really want to be there when they're just going to die on us anyway? Let's get a little perspective. Life is short. You never know what's going to happen. And don't let fear be the driving force in your life.
On Thursday, we are going to have a breakdown bonus episode where we talk about how our religion impacts how we date. So we are going to be talking about religious trauma and all that fun stuff. It is going to be a really great in-depth conversation with a mental health professional. So as always, I will see you whenever you decide to tune in next.